For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. July the 15th, we're on page 708, beginning Parshas Bechukosai, last parasha in Sefer Vayikra. Im Bechukosai Telechu, if you will go in my chukos, they translate that as decrees, which we'll talk about in a moment. Ves mitzvosai tishmeru, and you will guard my mitzvos, vasi semosam, and you will perform them. So if you do these things, you do what you're supposed to do, then, v'nasati gishmeichem bi'itam, I will give my rain in their times, in the proper times. V'nasnaha aretz yivula, the land will give its bounty. V'etz hasadeh yitein perio, and the tree of the field will give its fruit. V'yisiglachem da'ish es batzir, uvatzir yasig es zora. The da'ish, which is the threshing, will, it says in English, will last until the batzir. Batzir is the harvesting of the grapes. Hisig really means to reach, it'll take that amount of time. And your threshing will go all the way until its time. The threshing of the grain will go all the way until the time of the harvesting of the grapes. Uvatzir yasig es zara, and then the harvesting of the grapes will go all the way until the time of the planting. So you'll be constantly busy. You'll have no downtime. With your, that's which is a bracha, meaning there's so, going to be so much bounty of food, of growing food, that the seasons will run into each other. V'achaltem lachmechem lasova, you'll eat your bread for satiation. V'shaftem lavetach baritzachem, and you will dwell in security in your land. Let me just pause here for a minute and go through some of these things. The first pasuk we're going to come back to after we finish the brachos, but let me just first touch on some of these brachos. The rain in its time, in Israel, there are distinct rainy seasons and dry seasons. Even the rainy season, there's a distinct first rains, second rains, and there's clearly the time that it's supposed to rain, and the growing, the crops are based on those rains. If the rains, obviously if they don't happen, chas v'shalom, that's a terrible thing, it's a drought, but even if it does rain at the wrong time, that's also a problem. For example, the Gemara tells us rain in Nisan in Israel is a simen klala. That's actually a curse. That's not a good thing. That's bad for the crops. So everything has its proper time, and the bracha here is that the rains will come at their proper time. The seasons running into each other, as we said in Pasuk Hey, the threshing, the harvesting of the grapes, the planting, all of that implies that there's so much of every crop that it just takes a long time to do everything. Threshing doesn't just take a short time because there's so much to thresh. Harvesting, there's so much to harvest. The planting, there's so much to plant. That's all a sign of great bounty. Eating your bread for satiation means that not only will you be able to eat, but a little bit of eating will satiate you, so that the bread will be satisfying even if you don't have so much of it. So with all of the bounty of the food, you won't have to eat that much of it in order to be satisfied. And of course, you'll dwell in security in your land. That is self-evident. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. V'nasati shalom baretz, I will put peace in the land. Ushchavtem, and you will sleep. Ve'ein macharid, and there is no trembling. Nothing's going to scare you. Let's see how they say that here.
Frighten you.
Nothing's going to frighten you. Okay, fine. V'yishbati chayara amina aretz, and I will remove wild animals from your land. V'cherev lo savor ba'artzachem, and the sword will not pass through your lands. That phrase, the sword will not pass through your lands, for those who attend the Wednesday night Navi Shir, so that is what we spoke about this past Wednesday, because that's the sword of peace. It already said earlier that there'll be peace in the land. It says in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, It's, well, beginning of this pasuk, it says, "V'nasnati shalom baratz, I'll put peace in the land." So what do you mean, and the sword will not pass through your lands? Obviously, sword, of course, means an army. If it's peaceful, why should there be an army going through your land? So this means even an army of peace, even an army that is not coming through your land to attack you, but rather is just using your land as a shortcut to get to where it wants to have a war, even that will not go through your land. It will be prevented from going through your land. It will not, even that won't happen. That's all if we're doing the right thing. Urdaftemas oyveichem, you will chase away your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. Chazal tell us this means by their own sword. They'll have a civil war and beat each other up. You won't have to fight them. They'll beat themselves. V'radfumi kem chamishameya, five of you will be able to chase away 100 enemies, a ratio of 20 to 1. Umeya mikem rivavoyerdofu, and 100 of you will be able to chase away 10,000 of the enemies. Now that's a ratio of 1 to 100. So first it was a ratio of 1 to 20. Now it's a ratio of 1 to 100. So what is the what that seems to be contradictory? How is it going to be that you'll be able to chase them away? One of you will chase away 20 of them, or 100 of them? 5 to 100 is 1 to 20. 100 to 10,000 is 1 to 100. So what's the difference? So Rashi explains to us, because Eino, I'll read the Rashi and I'll translate it. Eino dome mu'atin ha'osen esatora limirubin ha'osen esatora. You can't compare a few people performing the Torah to a lot of people performing the Torah. So if you have 20 people who are performing the Torah, they will be able to chase away, excuse me, if 5 people performing the Torah, they'll be able to chase away 100 enemies. That's 1 to 20. But if you have 100 people performing the Torah, they'll be able to chase away 10,000, 1 to 100. The more people performing the Torah, the greater is the ratio that is going to be used that we'll be able to chase away our enemies. V'naflu ayvechem lifneichem lecharev, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. Here it means they'll fall before you, not in the normal way, meaning that it's going to defy logic, that it's going to appear illogical how many of them are going to die and fall by the sword, which won't seem to fit normal models of warfare, normal projections that are made. They're all going to fall before you. Ufanisi alechem, I will turn to you, meaning I'm going to turn to you to look to do good for you. Vifeisi eschem, I will multiply you. Virbeisi eschem, and I will increase you. Vakimosi es brisi itchem, and I will establish my covenant with you. This is a covenant, as Rashi says, a bris chadosh, a new covenant, a covenant that will be solid and that I will take care of you no matter what. Vachaltem yashan no shan. You will eat yashan no shan. Now those words all both mean old, which means grain that is from previous years. You'll be eating grain from previous years because the you'll have so much, you won't use it up. You won't have to eat that much anyway to begin with, because there'll be a bracha from the bread itself. And there'll be so much abundance that you'll have grain from previous years is what you'll eat. And as Rashi explains, the older the grain is, the better it will be, the older grain. So you're going to eat three-year-old grain because it's going to taste better even than the new grain. It's going to keep getting better. It's going to age like wine. It's going to get better. V'yashan mipnei chadash totziu. And the old grain you're going to have to remove from the silos because you're going to have new grain that's going to come in. You're going to have a backlog. You're going to have so much of an abundance of food that you'll have no place to put it. So you'll say, is that a bracha? The answer is yes, it is a bracha. Meaning, you're not going to have to worry about it. There's going to be so much. Your biggest problem is going to be, where do I put it? There's so much. V'nasati mishkani b'sochechem. I will put my mishkan, which this is referring to the Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes the Beis HaMikdash is referred to as the mishkan, sometimes the mishkan is referred to as the Beis HaMikdash. So this is referring to the Beis HaMikdash. I will place my Beis HaMikdash among you. V'lo sig'al nafshi eschem. And my, it says here, my spirit will not reject you, which means I'm going to stay within you. And we'll talk about that in a moment. That seems anticlimactic. I'll put my Beis HaMikdash, and by the way, I won't reject you. It's like everything was great until now. What if to say that for? So we'll talk about that in a moment. I will go among you. I'll be for you as a God. And you will be for me as a nation. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that took you out of Egypt, Miyos Lahem Avodim, from being slaves to them, Vo'eshbor Motos Ulechem, and I broke the yoke, the stays of your yoke. Okay. Vo'olech Eschem Komam Yus, and I have had you go with an erect. It means with your head held high. You'll feel proud of who you are. What does it mean? First of all, I'm going to go backwards over here. What does it mean in Pasuk Yud Beis verse 12? V'yisalachti b'sochachem, I will go among you, v'yoyisi lachem elokim, and I'll be for you for a God. So Rashi here says, let me read it to you because you can't say it better than Rashi says it. I will stroll with you in Gan Eden, Hashem says. Imagine that. Hashem says, I'll stroll with you in Gan Eden. We'll take a walk. Well, just enjoy each other's company. Like as if I'm one of you, kiviyachol. Velosiu mizdazim imeni, you will not be trembling from before me, even though I will be walking with you, as if we're just buddies, you won't tremble. Perhaps you'll think you won't be afraid of me, that you'll just think like you could just, you know, talk to me as if I'm your buddy. Talmud Lomar, that's why the Pasuk says, I will be for you as a God. Meaning, Hashem is saying, there'll be a familiarity between us that I will, as if, kiviyachol, as if we are just walking together. I'm with you. You'll feel my presence. You'll feel close to me. But it won't get to a point where you'll lose the respect you're supposed to have for me. That you'll maintain, which is the proper thing. That he's Hashem, we're not. Right? So that will be maintained. So it's both things. There'll be a certain sense of familiarity and a certain sense of comfort and calm, but at the same time, there will be also the proper respect. I'm going back one more pasuk, Yud Aleph 11, where it says, "I will put my Mishkan, my Beis Hamikdash, among you. V'lo sigal nafshi eschem, my soul will not reject you." So, what does that mean? That seems. Can you imagine? You have two people. You have a man and a woman. They're expressing their love for each other, and they're saying, you know, I'll love you forever, and you mean so much to me, da 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 da, and I won't reject you. It seems a little anticlimactic, right? I won't reject, right? So what does that mean over here? What place does that have over here? So this is addressing the common condition that you find, which is that the more familiar two people get, and the more time you spend together, that does start to wear down. The too much familiarity begins to wear down one's love for somebody else, or one's interest in being with somebody else. The more that two people spend time together, the more that there can be a sense of needing one's space. There's a little too much already. And that's a very common thing with human beings. So Hashem is saying, with all of this sense of kurva, all this closeness that we're going to have, me and you, Hashem says to us, don't be afraid that will breed a certain amount of contempt for each other, because it's like, oh, we can't take it anymore. Hashem says, no, 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 no. It's going to continue on and on, and I will not reject you. It's going to be that I'm going to want to remain together. And so it's going to be a beautiful relationship between us. All of this is promised to us if we do the right thing. So what is the right thing? So the right thing is the first pasuk in Parshas Bechukos. Let's go back to that first pasuk.
Question.
Yeah.
How do you remember? Sometimes I'll drink something and say, did I say bracha? You opened it before, but you didn't say it. How did you remember you didn't say it?
It's easier when you're in front of everybody else. So you're really nervous not to make a mistake. So the pasuk says in the beginning, "Im bechukosai teilecha." I'm going to read the English. If you will follow my decrees, ves mitzvosai tishmru, and you will observe my commandments, vaskisem osam, and you will perform them. So we have three things that are said over here. First of all, if you will go in my decrees, you'll follow my decrees. That's one. Two is you will perform my mitzvos, observe my commandments. It says here. And three is, the third one is perform them. The second one is to guard my mitzvos. So you will go in my chukim, my statutes, you will guard my mitzvos, and you will perform them. So what is each of these things? The mitzvos, we know what they are, the commandments. What does it mean to guard the mitzvos and perform the mitzvos? So typically when we find to guard mitzvos, let's start backwards. Performing the mitzvos is obvious. You do the mitzvos. So you do what Hashem says to do. That's pretty clear. What does it mean to guard the mitzvos? So guarding the mitzvos could mean to not do what Hashem says not to do. Shomer, to guard, like on Shabbos we have Shamar and Zachar. So Shamar is to keep to not do the malachos of Shabbos, to not do what we're not supposed to do. Zachar is like to say Kiddush and to have meals. Zachar is to do what you're supposed to do for Shabbos. Similarly, over here, one could say that when it says you should guard my mitzvos, that means don't do those things that I'm commanding you not to do. So don't eat not kosher food, don't do malacha on Shabbos, don't eat on Yom Kippur, etc. And then doing vasisem osam, doing the commandments, that's doing that which I tell you to do. So those would be the positives. So blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, eat matzah on Pesach. So there's the do's and the don'ts. So the guarding is the don'ts, and the asiyah, the doing, is the do's. That's one way of understanding it. The other way that sometimes it means when it says shmira, to guard, that could also mean to study it, to know it. Because if you don't study it, then you can't possibly know what to do. If we're all ignorant, then no one can keep the Torah. Even though ignorance is not in and of itself an avera, but it leads to doing things wrong because we don't know, we can't do. So there's a shmira as well.
Doesn't it say in Pirkei Avos that ignorance is not an excuse?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. Right. That's right. It in and of itself is not the avera, but it leads to many things wrong because people don't write. Okay, fine. So, but what is im bechukosai teilechu, if you shall go in my statutes? It says in the English, if you'll follow my decrees. So what does that mean? As Chazal tells us, Rashi says over here, it can't mean to do the mitzvos, because it says that explicitly later in the pasuk, and do the mitzvos. So what does it mean to go in my chukim? So Chazal say this means Shetiu amelim batorah, that you shall toil in Torah. You'll toil in Torah. This is referring specifically to the study of Torah, and it is referring to toiling in the study of Torah. Meaning, it's not referring to performing the mitzvot that it says later in the pasuk. It's not even referring to knowing what to do, because that may also be referred to in the pasuk. It's more than that. It's toiling in Torah. In Shetu amelim batorah. Amelus means to work very hard. That's what the words im bechukosai teilechu refer to. So if we do this, if we toil in Torah, we perform that, we guard the mitzvos, we perform the mitzvos, then all these good things happen. Now, we have to therefore understand, what does it mean to toil in Torah? What does that mean? In Shatu Amelim Batorah, toil in Torah. In order to understand what it means to toil in Torah, we first have to acknowledge the fact, and this is a critical fact if you want to understand what it means to toil in Torah, you have to acknowledge the fact that of the people of the Bnei Yisrael, of the Jewish people, only half the Jewish people are commanded to study Torah, and half are not. Only men are commanded to study Torah, women are not commanded to study Torah. So there can't be a requirement for women to toil in the study of Torah if there's no commandment to study the Torah. That's what you would think, logically. How could there be a commandment to toil, which means to put in a lot of effort, in the study of Torah, if there's no mitzvah for a woman to study the Torah? When you say the phrase to toil in Torah, what you conjure up correctly is an image of a sage who is putting his entire focus, using his intellect, to try to understand a very difficult passage in the Torah, whether it's in the Chumash, or whether it's in the Mishnah, or whether it's in the Gemara, or wherever it is, trying to figure it out, working it through, and working very hard at it. Right now, at this moment, we have we're at the end of called the term for the Kollel, and we have a major, major test. It is on Tuesday. We are bringing in Rabbi Yosef Berger from Baltimore, who is the Rebbe in Ner Yisrael, who gives the official tests for Smicha. And we finished a major, major section this year. We spent the whole year learning one of those sections. And we have him coming in on Tuesday, and he's going to be giving individual tests to all the Kollel rabbis on this particular section. It's a huge amount of information, and they've spent the whole year learning it, so it's essentially a final, and it's a very detailed test. He expects them to know everything, and he expects them to apply everything, and they are toiling in Torah. Let me tell you, they are here in the morning, they're here in the afternoon, they're here in the night, they are toiling. Well, you just see them, they're just, you see them sweating over there, Shulchan Aruch over there, right?
No pressure,
right. That's toiling in Torah. It's a good thing, the test is a good thing. So they're toiling in Torah. So that's what you, when you say the word amelus batorah, toiling in Torah, that's what you conjure up, which is the correct image. So it would appear, therefore, there can't be a mitzvah for a woman to toil in Torah if there is no mitzvah to study Torah. Even though a woman is permitted to study Torah, and a woman who studies Torah does receive reward for studying Torah because it's still, she's still, a woman who studies Torah is doing a mitzvah, but it is a voluntary mitzvah, not an obligatory mitzvah. Anytime there's a voluntary mitzvah, it is not as high a level as an obligatory mitzvah. The Gemara debates, what does one get more reward for? A mitzvah that one does that they are required to do, or a mitzvah that one does that is voluntary? On the one end, you could say, well, I should get more reward for what's voluntary, because if I don't have to do it, and I do it anyway, doesn't that show my love for Hashem, that I'm willing to do more than I have to do? So that would seem to imply that a voluntary mitzvah should have greater reward. But the Gemara says that's not so. The obligatory mitzvah has more reward, and the reason is because the Yetzirah fights harder when you have to do it. When you have to do it, you don't want to be told what to do. Right? Who wants to be told what to do? You're telling me what to do? I don't, right? So the Yetzer Hara fights back much more strongly when it's an obligatory mitzvah. Whereas a voluntary mitzvah, I'm doing it because I want to do it. So there's less resistance from the Yetzer Hara. And therefore, even though a woman is permitted to study the Torah, and a woman who does study the Torah does get reward, but the reward is still not on the same level as an obligatory mitzvah, because it's only voluntary. Whereas a man who is required to study the Torah, so there the mitzvah is of greater reward. And as a result, for a man, you could talk about an obligation to toil in Torah. You can't. How could you talk about obligating a woman to toil in Torah if she's not even obligated to study the Torah? So it would seem, therefore, this statement of that we should toil in Torah, we should be amelim in Torah, should only apply to half the Jewish people, which is very difficult to accept, because if all of these brachos are contingent on the Jewish people toiling in Torah, how could it be that it's only half the Jewish people that are expected to toil in Torah? That doesn't seem to fit over here. You would have expected all of these brachos should be dependent on things that are something that all of the Jewish people have to do. So we're going to see in a few moments that toiling Torah is broader than the image that one would conjure up of the sage who is struggling over the difficult passage. There's more to talk about in the toil of Torah. But before we do that, let's understand the question of the mitzvah of the study of Torah. Before we get to toil, what's the difference between studying Torah and toiling Torah? Studying Torah is studying Torah. If you open up anything and read it and it has to do with Torah, you're studying Torah. But that's not toiling. Toiling is sweating over it, is really working hard at it. That's toiling. Toiling, you picture someone in the field, like, you know, with a hoe or whatever it is, right? Toiling is working up a sweat. Let's understand the mitzvah of studying the Torah. Studying the Torah, so a man has a requirement, is required to study the Torah. So one could ask that, I mean, don't we all, women also, doesn't everybody have to know what to do? How, you know, you're going to say a woman doesn't have to study the Torah. Well, how's a woman ever supposed to know what to do? How are you supposed to keep Shabbos if you don't study the Torah? How are you supposed to keep kosher if you don't study the Torah? Anything. You can't move in Yiddishkeit without studying the Torah. So the answer is that everybody, man and woman, must study to know what to do. Everybody has to know what to do. You got to know what to do, how to conduct yourself in life. Everybody has to know. But a man, his obligation to study the Torah transcends simply knowing what to do. Even those parts of Torah which are not relevant to this particular man, and there are many parts of Torah that are not relevant to any particular man. For example, all the parts of the Torah that have to do with the laws of the Beis HaMikdash, the laws of Tumah and Tara, most of the laws of Tumah and Tara, the laws that have to do with the land of Israel, a lot of those laws are not relevant either today or to people living outside of Israel or you know, those sorts of things. They're not relevant. And if you're going to study only that which you need to know in order to live your life, you wouldn't study those things because they're not relevant right now. Or, for example, let's say, you know, there are mitzvot in the Torah that are specific to a king. A king has, there's a couple of paragraphs in the Torah that are directed only at the king. The king has to know these things and know what to do. No one else does. So a woman would have no reason to study that part of the Torah, at least no reason to know what to do, because she's not king. So she's not going to study that part in order to know what to do. Most men also wouldn't study that to know what to do, because most men are not king. Today, no one is king. So there's no reason to study it in order to know what to do. Nevertheless, a man has an obligation to study every part of Torah, even those parts of Torah that are not necessarily relevant right now or to this man. There's a requirement to study the entire Torah. So that is where the difference is in the study of Torah between a man and a woman. Everybody, men and women, have to know what to do, but men have an obligation to study beyond that. Every part of the Torah, even the parts that don't seem relevant, a man is required to study. More than that, once a woman knows what to do, say a woman has mastered the laws of Shabbos. Now, I grant you that's hard to do. It takes a long time. But let's say a woman has mastered the laws of Shabbos. Then she does not. There's no requirement for her to study the laws of Shabbos anymore. She knows them already. But for a man, the obligation is true even if he's already mastered the entire Torah. He still has a requirement to study the Torah. It has nothing to do, it's not linked to knowing what to do, or even knowing the information. There's a requirement for a man, v'hagisa bo yomam v'alayla, day and night, to study the Torah. That's a requirement that a man has. Now, the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos and other places makes it clear that that the mitzvah that connects us most to Hashem, of all the mitzvos, that mitzvah which connects us most to Hashem, both in this world and in the next world, is the study of Torah. It is the study of Torah that makes us most connected to Hashem. So the Gemara Maseches Brachos asks the question, Nashim b'may zachyan, how would a woman merit that connection to Hashem? What's the Gemara's question? A woman is allowed to study Torah, so perhaps she would merit the connection to Hashem the same way a man would, which is by studying Torah. But that can't be. The reason why it can't be is, first of all, many women are unable to study the Torah because they have other obligations that they have to deal with, and they can't study the Torah. But more than that, as we said before, if there is no obligation for a woman to study the Torah, then the reward, by definition, cannot be as great, because there is a greater reward to do a mitzvah that you're required to do rather than a mitzvah that is only voluntary. So if the study of Torah for a woman is only voluntary, it can't possibly pack the same reward as it does for a man. Because for a man, it's obligatory. So since he has to, it's going to have, therefore, a greater reward than for a woman who doesn't have to, it'll have a lesser reward. So the Gemara's question is, then how does a woman merit the level of connection that a man merits when he studies the Torah? Since when a man studies the Torah, he's obligated, he therefore is going to get a greater connection to Hashem. After all, the greatest reward is connecting to Hashem. That is really what reward is. So the man is going to get a greater connection, because a woman's study of Torah is only voluntary, therefore it can't have the same reward. The Gemara's question is, then how does a woman get that? It can't be that Hashem set up a system where a woman is unable to attain the same level. So how does a woman do it? So what's the answer? You can say, Mr. Stark.
You send your husband to learn. You make sure he learns, and you get the chelik in that. Because Rabbi Akiva's wife had a perfect example.
Okay, so what the Gemara says is that when a woman gets a man to learn, when she becomes the trigger for a man to study Torah, then she gets the same level of connection as the man. And let's explain this a little bit better. As I explain to all my daughters and explain to the young ladies in the community, let's understand that. You have a man who's required to study the Torah. So this man is unable to go study the Torah because he's got something that he has to take care of. He can't do it. For whatever reason, he has to take care of something. So a woman comes along and says to the man, you go study the Torah, I'll take care of this for you, and you go study the Torah. So he goes and studies the Torah, and she takes care of whatever the issue was. So when he goes and studies the Torah, so he's doing what he's required to do, and therefore he merits a very profound connection to Hashem. She merits the same level of connection, because since she triggered his study of Torah, therefore her merit is the same as his. Whatever level he got through that study of Torah, she gets the same because she triggered his study of Torah. Yeah, now, I want you to understand this very carefully, because this is very significant. Let's say again, you have that man, I don't know what he was doing. Let's say he was stuffing envelopes for the shul's annual dinner. And a woman comes along and says, you know what, you go to the base marriage and study, I will stuff the envelopes. Right? I'm going to volunteer to stuff the envelopes. She not only gets reward for stuffing the envelopes, she gets the connection of as if a man studied Torah, because a man is studying Torah. Now she gets that same level because she triggered his studying of Torah. Now, let's say you have two women. You have a man who's stuffing envelopes for the shul dinner. And you have two women. And they walk in. One woman says, I'm going to go to the base marriage and study Torah. She's allowed to. I mean, our base marriage we keep it only for men. But a woman is allowed to go study Torah. She says, I'll go sit in the women's section. I'm going to study Torah. Fine. So that's fine. And she gets reward for studying Torah. The other woman says, I'm going to relieve this man of what he's doing so that he'll go study Torah and I'll stuff the envelopes. So then you have two women. One is studying Torah herself. The other one enabled a man to go study Torah. The woman who studies Torah herself is definitely getting reward, but not on the same level as the man studying the Torah, because hers is voluntary, his is obligatory. The woman who is stuffing the envelope so that the man can go study Torah is getting reward, a greater reward. She's getting the reward of studying Torah from an obligatory standpoint, because she enabled the man to study Torah. That's what the Gemara is explaining over there, that in a way a woman is able to get the same level of connection to Hashem is by triggering a man's study of Torah. That's what the Gemara says in Brachos. How one does that, there are many ways of triggering the study of Torah, but that's what the Gemara is pointing out over there. Yes?
Is it only for the husband, or could it
be? No, any man. Any man. Any man.
So when we come as a woman to your class, and our husband not working.
Yeah, but
you should have done the other way around.
Yeah, but that's only if you can do it the other way around, right? And also, you can't ignore the fact that, first of all, I mean, this class is not to know what to do. This is more to study the Chumash. But if you're going to a class to know what to do, everybody has to do that. And also, you can't ignore that everybody needs to be inspired. And so whatever is going to inspire a person, whether it's a class, whether it's, you know, that's for everybody. Men and women, everybody has to get inspired. Otherwise, we atrophy. So I'm only talking about, all things being equal, right? There's no, you know... So then, all things being equal, then yes, if a woman gets the man to study, then everybody benefits more, including the woman. Now, the only reason why the Gemara uses the example, as Mrs. Tarkman said, of a person's husband or a person's sons, is because there it's more direct. It's easier because it's more direct. But it's any man. It's not only family members. Okay. Now, that's the paradigm that the Gemara points out. The thing is this, what about toil in Torah? So toil in Torah is more than what we've just talked about. There's knowing what to do, there's studying Torah. But what's toil in Torah? So toil in Torah is, as we said, working very hard, breaking a sweat, to really work hard to understand the Torah. That's toiling in Torah. So we started off with a question, how could it be that there is a mitzvah, or I should say that the Torah says all these brachos are contingent on something which only a man is required to do? And the answer is that although the study of Torah is only a requirement for men, but for women it is voluntary, it is not obligatory, the toil in Torah is obligatory upon everybody. Now, how can that be? Right, how can that be? So the answer is, because toil in Torah does not only refer to that iconic picture of the sage who's delving into the depths of Torah. Of course, that's the most common image, but that's not what toil in Torah means only. What does it mean? It means the following. We have a lot of people in this world. And people in the world, billions of people in this world, everybody has something that drives them, that motivates them, that their goals, their hopes, their dreams. For most people in the world, those hopes, goals, dreams, motivations, etc., they have to do with materialism, with the physical world. Sometimes it's a little bit more sublime than that. Sometimes it's family or whatever it is. But it's mostly non-spiritual things. We know that we are driven, at least we should be driven, and primarily we are driven, by spiritual endeavors. To grow closer to Hashem, to do mitzvos, etc. The question is, you have the Jewish people in Israel with a king, with a Beis HaMikdash, what is the national focus? What is the national drive? What is the nation out to do? So obviously it's to do the Torah. But the Torah is saying more than that. The drive of the nation needs to be that there should be toiling in Torah. Toiling in Torah, meaning breaking a sweat over the study of Torah, needs to be the national focus of all the Jewish people, which means the entire engine of the Jewish people is geared to get the toiling of Torah done, that people should be toiling in Torah. Now, obviously, since only men are obligated to study the Torah, it is the men who are going to be the ones in that iconic picture toiling over the study of Torah. But the toiling doesn't only refer, the amelus doesn't only refer to the actual study. All of that it takes in order to have the men sitting in the Beis Medrash and toiling over the Torah, it takes an entire country to make that happen. It's not going to happen with a few individuals or even with many individuals. It will only happen when there is a push amongst the entire country to make that happen. Now, the time when this happened over the entire country that we know of was Chizkiyahu HaMelech. We spoke about this on the Wednesday night class, that there he got the entire country to toil in Torah, which is an unbelievable thing. And that was an exception. That was something. But that is what's meant to be. Now, it is not precisely what people picture today is the women working so that the men can study Torah. That is an anomaly in history that we have today. We have that system. And the reasons for that system are many, and it is an appropriate system for today. We're not going to get into that specific issue in tonight's class about Kollel versus working and studying, etc. That's not the point of this tonight's class. But in order for true, real, in-depth Torah scholarship to take place, you have to have the entire country focused on that. And the more people, men and women, who are focused on that singular goal, which is that there be the toil of Torah taking place, the more that you have the focus on that, the more amelos batorah you will have. And it reflects itself in many ways. The way that people conduct themselves, the way that simply the fact that you have a national attitude that when a man has free time, he should be in the Beis Medrash and he should be delving into the Torah, that attitude makes an incredible impact. You imagine if that was the national attitude, if the attitude was men belong when they have free time, sometimes they're working, sometimes they're helping at home, whatever it is, but when they have time, they should be in the Beis Medrash. Would any man follow sports? Right? They wouldn't, because the national attitude would be, what are you doing? What are you wasting your time for? You should be in the Beis Medrash. Like, there's an attitude where the people are focused on this singular goal of get the men into that Beis Medrash over their Gemaras, right? That's the singular goal of the country. That doesn't mean that every man, every single second, is in the Beis Medrash. Men are working. Men are helping at home. Men are davening. Men also have to sleep and eat, right? But the national attitude of men and women is when a man is not doing something else that is necessary, he should be in the Beis Medrash. And he should be hitting that Gemara. Right? That's the national attitude. That's Shetu Amei LeMatorah. That applies to every man, every woman, even children who are old enough to understand that. That applies to the entire country. And that's what's being said over here, that when we have that attitude, all of these brachos ensue. The brachos come from what Hashem wants from us, is that we should treat the toiling of Torah as the national, I was going to say pastime, as the national focus, is that's what we're all out to make happen. That's what we're trying to do. And we do that, then all of these brachos follow. That's the amelus batorah. Today, so only a small section of Jews has this appreciation and pushes it. The very fact that we live in a community that this is to Rabbi Feldman's credit, that we have a shul that features a Beis Medrash. We feature it. And it's not just some place which has books you can go look something up. It's a place that's used regularly. And the people drop in and learn. Right? That's a very, 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 very laudable thing. That shows it's our focus, which is what it's supposed to be. That there should be an attitude. Now, of course, you know, sports is alive and well. Right? So I'm only using that as an example, of course. I'm just showing, right? So of course we have a long way to go. But the fact of the matter is that the concept is there, that we want to have a general push for the men to end up in that Beis Medrash over their Gemaras. And not just for a few minutes a day, whenever they're able to. They have a few extra minutes, go learn. Right? You have a day off today, get to the Beis Medrash. Right? That kind of attitude where, you know, okay, thank you for helping, now go. Right? That kind of attitude of the overall country. Yeah.
So can one also reach that same level of them and saying, well, if the Yisachar Zevulun kind of thing?
Yes, there is a certain Yisachar Zevulun where one is supporting the study of Torah with money. So of course, yes, there is a certain relationship. But the Yisachar Zevulun relationship that is described in the Torah is not typically what happens today. The true Yisachar Zevulun relationship is that they split the Torah learning of the Yisachar and they split the financial gains of the Zevulun. That's not usually what happens today. The average today is that you have someone who is able to support Torah, gives money towards the study of Torah, which is a wonderful thing. But it's not a true Yisachar Zevulun unless they're splitting everything 50-50.
Okay.
So, Sarah, don't come to your Wednesday class during the time of Hizkiyahu.
Yes.
Did they enjoy the prosperity and?
Yes. In Hizkiyahu's time, they there was an incredibly. I mean, he almost became Mashiach. Hizkiyahu made it the tenet of his reign as king that every man, woman, and child should know everything. The Gemara says that everybody, men, women, and children, everybody knew the intricate laws of Tuma and Tara. Right. So they were everywhere, the whole country.
How many years was that?
So that's hard to know exactly how long that went on for. It's hard to know how long that went for.
So Mashiach didn't come because.
So that the Gemara says because he didn't. That's a whole discussion. He didn't say Shira. He didn't say someone he was saved. Yeah, I'm going to speak about this on Tisha B'Av morning. This is my topic. Yeah, so it's as soon as the keynotes are over on Tisha B'Av morning. Let me just show this. So that's our. Well, so Mirz Hashem will continue on the 26th.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.